to. His grip on my hair tightened, and his hips thrust faster.
God, you're fucking sexy,
he ground out through gritted teeth. I purred my own enjoyment as I felt his dick pulse. He was close. His brow furrowed and he started breathing harder, grunting every time I plunged down.
You want me to come like this?
He asked, almost breathless, and loosened his grip on my hair. In answer, I took him as deep as I could. He grunted hard and fisted my hair, and I felt him unleash. He drew his cock in and out of my mouth with quick thrusts, never hard enough to hurt me, but enough that his girth thickened and a low growl rumbled in his throat. His eyes rolled back as he started to come, the thick spurts hitting the back of my throat. His cock pulsed between my lips, and his deep grunts and ragged breaths were so sexy I couldn't get enough. I swallowed quickly and let his cock slip out of my mouth. He staggered backward, his pants around his ankles, and blinked hard.
Holy fuck.
I brushed my hair back from my face and stood. You like that?
Oh my God.
He blinked again, like he was dumbstruck. Then his icy blue eyes fixed on me.
Get the fuck over here.
I giggled while he manhandled me onto the bed. He kissed my mouth, then down my neck, nibbled on my collarbone. His hand slid beneath my shirt to splay across my ribs, just below my bra. We'd already decided we didn't need condoms. We both knew we were clean, and I was on birth control. It was nice not to have to worry about them anymore. He kicked his pants the rest of the way off, then went to work on my clothes. He'd said he'd undress me slow, but he hadn't said he'd be soft. He grabbed my shirt in his fist and pulled, jerking it up over my face. With my view obscured, he dragged his teeth over my nipple through the lacy fabric of my bra. With rough hands, he pulled my shirt over my head, then pinned my arms down. He sucked on my neck, then kissed his way down to my chest. He nuzzled between my boobs, kissing and licking his way from one nipple to the other. He let go of my arms to unfasten my jeans, then yanked them down my legs. Flipping me over, he unclasped my bra. I pushed myself up onto my elbows and let it fall down my arms. His hands slipped beneath my panties and I arched my back, lifting my hips and sticking my ass in the air so he could take them off. His mouth followed his hand, kissing down my back, across my ass cheek, over the back of my thigh. Finally, he had me undressed. He flipped me back over and settled between my thighs, draping my legs over his broad shoulders.
Mmm, he hummed. I love this pussy. So fucking pretty. So good.
I lay back on the pillow and enjoyed the feel of his tongue making lazy laps around my clit, up my soft folds. It was rough and wet and warm, and next to his cock when he fucked me hard, it was the best thing I'd ever felt. He was no quieter licking me than he had been when I'd sucked his dick. He groaned, lapping at me with enthusiasm. Pushing my thighs back, he sucked on my clit, moaning like he couldn't get enough. Heat and tension built so fast it took my breath away. I moved with him, rolling my hips, grinding myself against his mouth. He slipped a finger inside me and I moaned, the extra pressure so good. His tongue was relentless. I writhed against the sheets, running my fingers through his hair. He didn't let up. A second finger slid inside and my silky inner muscles trembled. Don't stop that, I breathed. I was so close, my pussy hot and clenching around his fingers. He growled again and the vibration sent me over the edge. Leaning my head back, I rode out my orgasm, the pulses rippling through me in waves. He still didn't stop, and my climax stretched out until I couldn't take it anymore. "Stop," I begged, starting to giggle again. "Stop. Oh, God, Gibson." His face lifted, his mouth wet, and he grinned.
"Told you you'd beg me to stop."
My legs fell to the sides and my arms flopped onto the bed. "That was amazing."
"Good, but I'm not finished with you. On your knees, beautiful."
I smiled back at him. Gladly, I still wanted to feel his cock inside me. He muscled me onto my tummy, then grabbed my hips to lift my ass into the air. I braced myself on my forearms and looked back at him over my shoulder. Caressing my skin, he looked me over.
"So beautiful. God, I love you."
"I love you too. Now get busy fucking me." Biting his bottom lip, he took his dick in his hand and stroked a few times. "Keep going," I said. I wanted to watch him make himself hard. He stroked a little faster and his cock quickly hardened. His abs flexed and he squeezed my ass with his other hand.
"Do you like that, baby?"
he asked, still stroking himself. "Yeah," I breathed. "That's so hot."
"How about this?"
He slid his hand to the base of his shaft and scooted closer to me. Then he rubbed the tip up and down my slit. I moaned at the feel of him rubbing himself all over me. "That's good." Focusing the tip right over my clit, he rubbed it up and down fast.
"Holy fuck, this looks good."
Pressure built again as he teased my clit with his cock. I rocked my hips back, seeking more. The friction was good, but I needed to feel him filling me. "Gibson," I whimpered.
"Yeah, baby?"
"Gibson, please."
"You want this?"
I looked over my shoulder, and he stroked his cock again, fast this time like he was serious. His abs were tight, his chest glistening with sweat. He groaned, his jaw clenched as he rubbed his hard length, his fist moving up and down his thick shaft. "You better put that cock inside me," I said.
"Yeah?"
he asked, still stroking hard. I rocked backward. "Now, Gibbs." Grabbing my hips, he shoved his cock into my soaking wet pussy. I cried out at the sudden pressure, the agonizingly sweet feeling of his thickness inside me. Two hard thrusts, and my inner muscles danced, vibrating with tension. He smacked my ass cheek with a sharp crack. I arched harder, the sting of it driving me crazy. One more smack, and I laughed. Safe in Gibson's bedroom, I was uninhibited and free. I loved the way he made me feel deliciously dirty in all the best ways.
"I'm gonna come so hard in you, baby," he growled. "This pussy feels fucking amazing."
His grip on my hips tightened, and he thrust harder. I fisted the sheets, breathing hard, relishing the way he fucked me like this. Like I could take it. He didn't treat me like I was broken. He loved me like I was whole and strong enough to handle him. I loved it. The heady rush of a second orgasm hit me like fireworks. He grunted hard and drove in deep while my pussy pulsed around him. I felt his cock throb as he emptied himself into me. Groaning, thrusting hard, both of us lost in this moment, in each other, in the intense physical expression of everything we felt. When he finished, he slipped out and let go of my hips. I collapsed onto the bed, breathing hard. "I don't think I can move," I said, my face in the sheets. He toppled over next to me and slid his hand around my waist, hauled me against him.
"Then just stay right here, love."
We lay together, completely spent, catching our breath. His sweat mingled with mine, and he peppered my ear and neck with gentle kisses. It was everything I needed. He was everything I needed. I was sated, content, and so in love. Chapter 34, Maya. Saturday afternoon, we sat out on the back porch steps side by side. Gibson idly tossed a ball for cash, his fenced-in area was working out great, and listened to the birds sing. Without a pressing need to go anywhere, we'd spent the day at home. We didn't know what we were going to do if Lee Williams stuck around, or if he started poking around enough to come out here. For now, he had an entire town watching his every move, and he had no idea they were doing it. Gibson's phone buzzed, and he gave it the side eye for a moment before checking.
Huh, Henrietta's got something trapped in her cabin again.
Henrietta? The woman who doesn't speak? He nodded and stood.
She says it's a bear, but it's probably just an angry raccoon. I should hike up there and help her get rid of it.
I blinked at him a few times. I have so many questions right now. His mouth curled in that slow, sexy grin that turned my insides to liquid.
Do you want to come out with me? It's a bit of a hike, but nothing you can't handle.
Yeah, that sounds great. Gibson suggested I put on long pants to keep my legs from getting scratched, so I changed into jeans. A bank of clouds had rolled in, dimming the sunshine, and there was a crispness to the air. Fall was descending on the West Virginia mountains. With a very excited cache on his leash, we struck out into the woods. Gibson had a backpack stuffed full, although I wasn't sure what he'd put in it. The land rose steadily, and we had to pick our way through the underbrush, eventually coming to a more defined trail. Cash scrambled over logs and rocks, his tail wagging. He seemed to be enjoying our little adventure.
I take it you've been out here before.
A couple times, he said. She got real sick once, the flu, I think, so I brought her a supply of canned soup and some Tylenol to get her fever down. And last year she had a raccoon problem.
Do you know anything about her? Why she lives out here?
Nope.
I grabbed a branch and used it to balance as I pulled myself up a particularly steep incline. But aren't you curious about her?
A bit. But it's her life. She should be able to live it how she wants without people bothering her about it. Besides, if she wanted me to know more, she'd tell me.
But she doesn't talk.
She communicates just fine.
We continued in silence for a while. It was a tough hike. Yoga kept me strong and flexible, but this was something else. Just when I thought I might have to stop and rest, my legs were burning, the land leveled off. The trees were thick and the cool air felt good. There was something about the way Gibson navigated the woods with such ease. A big, bearded man in a flannel and jeans with his strong, calloused hands. I indulged in a brief daydream, Gibson and me taking to the woods to disappear, building a shelter, living off the land, watching him chop wood, cozying up in front of a fire to keep warm. The reality of living in the wilderness wouldn't be nearly as romantic, but it was still fun to imagine Gibson as a mountain man taking care of me in the forest. It made me wonder what would have happened if I'd made it to his apartment that night instead of being picked up by his father.
It's just up here, he said.
We emerged into a small clearing with a weathered cabin in the center. The wood was gray with age, but the boards were straight. It had a small porch at ground level and one old window that I could see, with remnants of chipping paint on the frame. Henrietta sat on the porch, her thin legs bent, her back against the door. She had long, graying hair that hung around her shoulders. Her clothes were worn, but her sneakers looked new.
"Having some trouble?" Gibson asked.
She nodded and jerked her thumb behind her. As if on cue, there was a crash inside the cabin. Cash barked.
Another angry raccoon?
he asked. She shook her head hard, making her hair whip around her face, then held up an arm to indicate height.
Bigger than an angry raccoon?
He asked. She nodded, just as vehemently.
That's why you think it's a bear.
She nodded again, her brown eyes wide. I grabbed Gibson's arm. You can't go in there if it's a bear. He laid his hand over mine and turned to speak quietly.
It ain't a bear. Henrietta's not afraid of much, but for some reason she's terrified of raccoons. Makes her exaggerate.
There was another crash inside the cabin. I still didn't like this.
Even if it's a raccoon, that doesn't sound good. What about rabies?
I've been vaccinated.
Cash barked again, the leash going taut in Gibson's hand. Henrietta's eyes fell on me, like she'd noticed me for the first time. Using the door handle to help her stand, she rose on skinny legs. I stood still, mesmerized by her intense gaze. She had deep lines in her forehead and around her eyes. She took slow steps forward, scrutinizing me. Gibson placed a hand on the small of my back.
This is my friend Callie. You remember Callie?
She touched her hand to her chest, still staring at me, then nodded slowly.
She was gone for a long time, but she found her way back, Gibson said.
Her face broke into a wide smile. She stopped in front of me and took one of my hands in hers. Her skin was somehow soft and calloused at the same time, her fingernails short and clean. She held my hand up, laying her other hand on top of mine. Her eyes still didn't leave my face, and she nodded, squeezing my hand. Hi, Henrietta.
I was glad to see her, too, Gibson said.
Another crash in the cabin reminded us why we were out here. I took Cash's leash while Gibson dropped his backpack and opened it, pulling out a pair of thick leather gloves, a bag of dog food, and a big green tarp.
Okay, Henrietta, he said, fitting his hands into the gloves. You stay out here with Callie and Cash. I'll get your bear.
Henrietta and I backed up a few steps. Cash barked again but didn't seem interested in following Gibson into the cabin. He stayed near my legs. Be careful, I said. Gibson just grunted. He paused at the door, his hand on the handle, took a deep breath, and went inside. Henrietta clasped my hand. We waited, staring at the cabin. For a long moment, all was quiet. I couldn't decide if that was a good sign. What if Gibbs was wrong and there really was a bear inside? Or what if the raccoon bit or scratched him? Had he been serious about already having a rabies vaccine? Sudden crashes and clatters rang out from inside, making me jump. Seconds later, the door flew open and Gibson barreled out, the tarp bundled up in his arms. Whatever was inside growled, and the tarp shook. Gibson's face was calm, his jaw set. With his arms around the violently thrashing tarp, he jogged into the trees, disappearing from sight. Henrietta let out a sigh and let go of my hand, as if the worst was over. My heart raced, and I held Cash's leash to keep him from following Gibson into the trees. Quiet settled over the forest, and Henrietta went into her cabin, leaving the door open. It felt like ages before Gibson emerged, walking through the woods like he hadn't just wrestled a wild animal. He had the tarp slung over his arm, obviously no longer filled with a raging raccoon, or whatever it had been. Are you okay? I ran to him, Cash leading the way. I expected to see scratches and bites, maybe blood, but he seemed fine.
Of course. The fucker was pissed, though. I can see why she was scared. That was one of the biggest raccoons I've ever seen.
How did you catch it?
Suckered him onto the tarp with some dog food, then wrapped him up.
He crouched down to give Cash some attention, rubbing his head and letting him lick his face a few times.
Works every time.
You're something else, Gibson Bodine. He glanced up at me and grinned. Should we go talk to Henrietta? I asked.
Yeah, we'll leave Cash out here. It's a bit cramped inside.
I helped him stuff the tarp in the backpack. Then we tied Cash up on the porch. Gibson fished in his pocket and handed him a dog treat. He rapped his knuckles on the open door.
Everything all right now?
Henrietta was busy cleaning up the mess the raccoon had left. She set a small wooden sculpture on a rough wood shelf, then nodded and gestured for us to come inside.
It was like walking into an antique store, only far more fascinating. Bits of broken CDs hung on strings, glinting in the light as they twirled. The walls were covered with a dizzying arrangement of items. Faded signs, pieces of rusty metal, old license plates. There were oddly shaped sticks, shelves full of rocks, baskets overflowing with odds and ends, and something that looked like it might be a piece of broken road cone. She'd arranged everything in such a way that it was strangely beautiful. An old-fashioned ceramic sink that looked like it weighed about 500 pounds sat on a sturdy cabinet. The dark stain faded.
Does she have a well?
Yep, Gibson said. I don't think she's the first person to live up here, but I don't know who built it.
There was an interior door, open a crack, and a curtained area at the back. She had shelves with food and supplies from a store. Herbs hung from the ceiling above the sink, and she had almost an entire wall of shelves holding mason jars. Red ones looked like they might have jam or berry preserves. Others had dried meat and various things I couldn't place. A wood stove appeared to provide both heat and a cooking surface. Gibson dug in the front pocket of his backpack and handed her a cell phone.
Fully charged and no crack in the screen.
She took the phone and held it to her chest, smiling at Gibson. With a nod, she carefully put it on a shelf, patting it as if to say she'd take care of it. I didn't see any lights or outlets. Does she have power?
No, but I got her a few spare batteries that charge it. When she comes into town, she charges everything up at the library. Or sometimes she just comes to my place and swaps out a dead battery for a full one.
Wow. I guess you guys have a good system. He shrugged like it wasn't a big deal.
It's mostly for emergencies. I doubt she keeps it on most of the time. But it has GPS, so if she got in real trouble, she could call for help and a rescue crew could get out here.
Or if she has a bear in her cabin, she can let you know. He grinned.
Exactly.
Henrietta worked quietly, writing her belongings, picking things up off the floor and finding places for them on her many shelves. Can we help? I asked. She nodded, so Gibson and I picked up what we could. She directed us with silent gestures, ensuring we put things where she wanted them. You have quite the interesting collection. I righted a little wooden sign that had toppled over. The paint was faded almost to nothing, but I could see the faint outline of the words ice cream. She beamed with pride, clasping her hands and looking around. There was a beat-up Virginia license plate next to the ice cream sign. I brushed my fingers across the bent metal, and it felt like a bolt of electricity shot through my body. Gasping, I jerked my hand away.
You all right? Gibson asked. Did you touch something sharp?
No. I stared at the license plate, unable to look away. The frame was warped, but still intact. White scratches marred the surface, but I could read it. Richmond Music and Dance Academy. The box in my mind exploded, as if a bomb had gone off inside, blowing the lid off its hinges. I clutched my chest, gasping for air. I couldn't breathe.
Callie, what's wrong?
My arms burned, as if new slices oozed blood, as if I was 16 all over again, with razor cuts in my skin. Shoving my sleeves up, I stared at my arms. The scars were still covered in tattoos. No blood, no new wounds. But I knew. I remembered. Those old memories that had been shrouded with hazy darkness suddenly broke free, clear and terrifying. the last piece of Callie's life. The piece I'd buried so deep it could never hurt me again came ripping to the surface.
It was her.
Honey, what's going on?
Gibson was there, his hands on the sides of my face, his brow furrowed with concern.
My mom had a license plate like that, I said, my voice shaky and weak. I took music lessons there, and they gave us those frames. She put it on her car. It was prestigious. I had to audition to get in. She wanted everyone to know.
He brushed my hair back from my face.
You don't have to.
Yes, I do.
I held his arms, drawing strength from his touch. I kept my eyes down, remembering. Chapter 35, Callie. 13 years ago. A droplet of sweat trickled down my back as I walked down my driveway. I'd been at the lake all day, but that wasn't why I was sweating now. I didn't know what was wrong, really. I wasn't coming home late. I hadn't done anything that I wasn't allowed to do. Today, that is. Yesterday was another story. But my parents didn't know about that. I tugged at the sleeves of my red cardigan, a reflexive gesture. They were already down. It was amazing how quickly I could go from feeling relaxed and carefree, hanging out with all the bootleg Springs kids, to anxious and afraid. This was my home, my summer home at least. The sight of it shouldn't have made my stomach knot with fear. But I couldn't remember a time when I'd felt safe at home. Taking a deep breath, I went inside. I closed the door hard enough that it would make a sound without slamming it. It was a delicate balance, make sure they knew I was home, but avoid calling too much attention to myself. Luck seemed to be in my corner this evening. Dad was in his study, but Mom was nowhere to be seen. He looked up as I walked by, giving me a brief nod. Even seated, my father was an imposing figure. His hair was going white, but his shoulders were square, his posture rigid. He was authority personified. The tightness in my back eased as I went upstairs to my room and softly closed the door behind me. The lavender floral bedspread had ruffles around the edges, and a pile of decorative pillows were placed with precision. The walls were painted lavender to match, the furniture all whitewashed beige. Most girls I knew had posters of bands or celebrities papering their bedrooms. Not me. I had colorful framed prints of flowers and ducklings. It looked like a 10-year-old lived in this room, not a 16-year-old girl with only 2 years until adulthood. Until freedom. Although I was itching to put on my headphones and lose myself in music, pretend I was anywhere but here, I couldn't risk it before dinner. I might miss my summons to the family table. Instead, I sat on my bed and took out my journal, flipped through the pages. I didn't keep a diary. My parents would never have let me record the truth on paper, not even in a diary that no one else would see. So I wrote songs. Deep inside the words penned on these pages was my truth. And maybe someday I'd be brave enough to share it. I traced my fingers over the newest page. A song I'd written late last night after the biggest act of rebellion I'd ever committed. I was allowed out of the house, for now at least. My parents dangled the possibility of house arrest over my head constantly. I was to stay in town, never enter someone's house, and be home for dinner. I followed those rules each and every day. Except yesterday. I hadn't gone inside anyone's home. I'd been back before dinner. But I'd left town. Worse, I'd left town with Gibson Bodine. It had been such a risk, But when he'd said there was an outdoor music festival in Perrinville, I hadn't been able to resist. I wanted to jump up and hug him, but Gibson wasn't a hugger. And it would have been weird anyway. Gibbs and I weren't like that. He was my friend. Probably the best friend I'd ever had. But not someone I'd hug. When he'd asked if I wanted to go to Perrinville to see the festival, I'd taken the leap and said yes. He'd met me outside town so no one would see us leave. It had been the best day of my entire life. I closed my eyes, breathing in the memories, the sights, the sounds. I'd never heard music like that live before. It had filled my soul, soothed every ache and wound I carried. For a little while, I hadn't been Callie Kendall, obedient daughter. I'd been someone else, someone free. I was desperate for that, for freedom. I had 2 more years, but sometimes I wasn't sure if I could make it. Callie, my mother's voice carried up the stairs. Dinner. Her sweet tone set me on edge. 16 years of this, and I couldn't tell when she was faking. Sometimes that soft call meant she was in a good mood, and I'd have a peaceful evening. Other times, it masked her displeasure, lulling me into a false sense of security. I'd let my guard down, thinking all was well, only to be blindsided by her cold anger for some perceived transgression. I hurried downstairs, not wanting to give either of them a reason to be angry tonight. Mom was in the kitchen, pulling a roast with potatoes out of the oven. "Set the table," she said without turning to look at me. She wore a silk blouse with an apron tied around her waist, and her hair was pulled back in a bun. "Yes, ma'am." Keeping my eyes down like a good girl, I took the plates and silverware to the table, set them neatly atop the beige lace placemats. Mom brought the serving dishes to the table, and I poured ice water for the three of us. Dad emerged from his study, his face cold and serious. Worry ate at me, making my stomach hurt. I took my place at the dinner table and gently unfolded my napkin in my lap. My parents engaged in meaningless small talk while we dished up our food. I didn't mind. Shallow conversations about the weather were preferable to Dad talking about work. I already knew far more than I wanted to about the things my father did. My fork dangled from my fingers while I picked at my food. It was hard to eat. My parents behaved as if I wasn't there, a good sign. But there was an electric tension in the air. It rippled through me, making my back knot up tight and my throat go dry. Was it my imagination, or was she about to... Callie... My gaze lifted to hers, and my blood turned to ice. She had the eyes of a corpse, flat and unfeeling. "Callie, I addressed you."
"Yes, ma'am."
She put her fork down.
"We have something to discuss."
My heart beat wildly, and another trickle of sweat ran down my spine.
"What?" "Where were you yesterday?"
I felt suddenly paralyzed, as if my brain and body had ceased to be connected. Did she know? Was she testing me to see if I'd lie, or was this a drill, a means of ensuring I remembered that they could take away what little freedom I had in the blink of an eye? Maybe I'd start with where I'd been in the morning. Not a lie, but not the entire truth either.
"I took a walk on the beach."
"Don't lie to me," she snapped. I shook my head, looking away, gluing my eyes to my plate.
"No, I really did. I went to the lake and took a walk."
"Do you mean to tell me that you spent the entire day walking around the lake?"
"Well, no. I mean, no, ma'am."
"I know you left town, Callie Dawn."
I tried not to visibly flinch at the use of my first and middle name. Panic swept through me, twisting my stomach and making my palms sweat. She knew. Oh, God, she knew.
"Yes, ma'am,"
I said, my voice barely above a whisper. Dad looked up as if only just now taking an interest in the conversation.
"This is your chance to come clean," she said. "All I'm asking for is the truth."
"I didn't go far. Just to Perrinville."
"You know the rules, Callie. You left town without our permission."
My eyes still downcast, I nodded.
"Who were you with?"
Dad asked. The lie slipped off my tongue so fast it was as if someone else was speaking.
"Some other summertimers, high school kids. A group of them were going, so I tagged along."
"This is unacceptable," Mom said. "What makes you think I'll tolerate this level of disobedience? You're not allowed to leave town, especially not with some ragtag group of miscreants."
I nodded like a good girl. The way her voice kept rising should have had me terrified, but all I could feel was relief. She didn't know I'd gone with Gibson. And I realized something. I'd face her at her worst to protect my friend from my parents. I'd never tell them.
"Do you hear me, Callie?"
She slammed her hand on the table.
"Your father and I will not be disrespected like this."
I desperately wanted to ask how they knew I'd left town, but I knew better than to ask questions when she was like this.
"Yes, ma'am."
"This is the problem with kids these days," she said,
and I didn't know if she was speaking to me or my father.
"You let them out of your sight, and it breeds nothing but rebellion."
She stood and clamped her hand on my arm, her grip unnaturally strong. I didn't resist her pull as she dragged me into the kitchen, dread making me want to vomit. Dad didn't get up. He never watched her punish me.
"I'm doing this for your own good, Callie."
The lack of emotion in my mother's voice was chilling. She stopped at the counter next to the sink and pulled my arm onto the cold marble, my palm facing up.
"I can't allow disobedience to fester inside you. It'll ruin you if I let it."
My lower lip trembled, but I swallowed back the tears. She dragged the sleeve of my sweater up to my elbow, baring my forearm. My skin was marred by a few fresh scabs on top of older scars, a crisscross pattern of horizontal slices. When I was little, it had just been bruises. By the time I was 12, she'd started drawing blood. She held my arm down against the cool granite countertop.
"Look at this. Look at what a horrible girl you are."
I didn't want to look. I hated seeing my arms, but I didn't dare disobey.
"Pain is the price you pay."
She opened a drawer and took out a box cutter. The box cutter.
"It's the only way, Callie Dawn. You keep making me do this."
I sucked in a quick breath and held it as she lowered the blade to my arm. The point bit into my skin and I squeezed my eyes shut.
"When will you learn?"
She drew the blade across my arm, leaving a hot trail of burning pain.
"When will you stop disobeying us?"
Another line of fire on my skin, close to the first.
"When will you stop making me do this?"
Cracking my eyes open, I tried not to flinch at the blood. It seeped from the wounds she'd inflicted, dark red droplets trailing down to the counter. Dad would come in later and clean everything with bleach. He wouldn't stop her, but he always cleaned up her messes. He knew her punishments kept me silent, kept me from telling people what I knew about him. My arm was on fire, but she held it in place. If I moved, she'd keep going, maybe start on my other arm. But if I held very still, kept quiet like a good girl. Maybe she'd stop. Maybe tonight I'd only get 3. Another slice, closer to the inside of my elbow. I shuddered, choking back a sob. That one was deep. She hated it when I cried, so I held it in, desperate for this to be over.
"You're a stupid child," she said. "Anyone else would have learned by now. I hate that you force me to do this, Callie. Apologize."
"I'm sorry," I whispered.
"I can't hear you. Apologize for your disobedience."
"I'm sorry I disobeyed. I won't do it again. I'll be good. I promise."
She let go and I fumbled for a paper towel. Dad would burn it later. I held it over my latest wounds and clutched my arm to my chest, my eyes on the floor. My heart raced. Was she finished? Would she let me go? I risked a look. She stood with the razor still in her hand, staring at me, her eyes cold and dead.
"Give me your other arm."
I didn't move. For the first time in my life, I didn't jump to do what she said. Pain and fear swirled like a tempest, and a voice in my head screamed at me to obey. Be a good girl. If I did what she said, maybe it would be over soon.
"Callie Dawn!"
Something inside me snapped. I could feel it break, the cracks snaking out like broken glass. "No." She stared at me for a beat, shock plain on her face.
"Excuse me."
Never in my life had I refused my mother. But now that I had, now that I'd uttered that one forbidden word, I felt heat rise from deep inside. I was sick of living in fear, sick of subjecting myself to her pointless torture. Because no matter how hard she'd tried, she'd never broken me. She'd never convinced me she was right. She was insane. I said no. I held my wounded arm tight against my chest.
"You're not going to hurt me again."
She shook her head, her dead eyes never leaving mine.
"Just this once. I will repeat myself. Give me your other arm." "No."
Her jaw clenched and one eye twitched. My heart beat furiously, the urge to run almost overwhelming. Without a word, she surged forward and backhanded me across the face. Pain erupted across my cheek, the shock of it crushing the air from my lungs. I turned, trying to shield myself from her next attack.
"Mom, stop!"
A heartbeat later, her next blow came. Something hard cracked across my shoulder. A book, maybe. One of the heavy cookbooks she kept on the counter. I ducked to avoid her, but she hit me again and again, each smack harder than the last. I could feel the bruises already blooming across my back.
"Stop!"
I screamed. I risked a glance at her and realized my mistake, but it was too late. She swung the book right at my face, and it smashed into my nose with an audible crunch. The pain was blinding, but somehow I didn't crumple to the floor. Staying hunched over so she couldn't get to my face again, I bolted from the kitchen. Steady footsteps followed me, her pace unhurried. Before I could reach the front door, she grabbed a handful of my hair, yanking me backward. I screamed, kicking and flailing, fighting back for the first time in my life. How was she so freakishly strong? And why was she so silent? I shrieked, trying to duck away. She let go of my hair and I covered my head. She didn't say a word. Twisting, I hit back, scoring an open-handed slap to her face. She staggered back a step. Rage burned in her eyes, searing away the deadness. Sheer hatred twisted her features.
How dare you? She snarled.
Her attack was so fast, I barely saw it coming. I tried to turn away, but she lashed out, and the box cutter sliced my face. I screamed, clutching my cheek, the pain searing.
You will be a good girl. I will make you be good.
Imogen.
Dad's voice was hard, and my mother stopped, her hand with the box cutter raised.
Enough.
I crumpled to the ground, gasping for breath. What had happened? He never stopped her.
Callie, go to your room, he said.
I was bleeding and could barely see, but I scrambled to my feet. Anything to get away. I rushed upstairs to my room and shut the door behind me. I was too afraid to look in the mirror, but I could feel the long, jagged cut running from my cheekbone to my upper lip. My nose throbbed. I couldn't get my fingers anywhere near it without fresh waves of nauseating pain ripping through me. But in that moment, standing in a bedroom I hated, dripping blood onto the floor, I decided I was leaving. I wasn't going to wait for my father to come upstairs and tell me why she'd done it, explain how important it was for a man like him to have an obedient daughter, that she did it for the good of our family, and if only I'd be a good girl, she could finally stop. No, she was crazy. And I wasn't going to live like this anymore. I had no idea where this newfound courage had come from. Maybe I was finally going nuts. But it chased away the blinding pain just enough that I quietly opened my bedroom door and peeked out. One of my eyes was swelling shut, so I turned my head to get a better look. I didn't see my parents. Maybe I could have waited until they were asleep, but my heart swelled with resolve, and I knew I had to go now, or I might never feel this brave again. Tiptoeing as softly as I could, I didn't have shoes on. I crept downstairs. Voices came from Dad's study. It was now or never. With my heart racing so fast, I wondered if it might burst. I silently padded to the back door. It opened without a sound. Risking one last glance behind me, no sign of my parents, I went outside and shut the door. And then I ran. My bare feet tore over the cobblestone patio, then dirt and bark, grass. I ran harder than I'd ever run in my life, sprinting for the woods near our house. I didn't slow down until I was surrounded by trees. My arm was bleeding worse than I'd realized, and my entire face felt like it was on fire. I slowed so I wouldn't trip. It was too dark to see much. Luckily, I knew these woods well. Veering toward the road, I jogged as fast as I dared, only one thought in my mind. Gibson. He'd help me. I knew he would. Most people were afraid of my father, and rightly so. But Gibson wasn't scared of anything. He'd find me a place to hide, help me figure out where to go, because I wasn't going back. I couldn't turn them in. They'd kill me if I did. Dad might balk at killing his own daughter, but not enough to stop my mother from doing it. And she'd do anything to protect their perfect image, protect their power. Gibson, he'd help me. Before I reached the road, my feet were cut and scraped, and I could barely see out of my left eye. Gingerly, I touched my nose. Blinding pain almost made me drop to my knees. It hurt to breathe, hurt to move. But still, I kept going. The trees parted, and I stepped out onto the shoulder of the road. I was right on the edge of town. Gibson's place wasn't far. I'd never been there, but I knew where he lived. I limped along the road, the pain in my face making my eyes water and my stomach churn. It was getting worse by the second.
I had to get off the street before my parents started looking for me. Just a little bit farther, one foot in front of the other. I could make it. The sound of a car behind me sent my heart into overdrive. Oh, God, please don't be them. Please. It slowed, pulling over to the side behind me. No, I whimpered. I wanted to run, but my feet were scraped raw. My knees buckled, and I crumpled to the ground.
Hey there, are you all right?
I took a shuddering breath. That wasn't my father's voice. Shaking with shock and pain, I glanced over my shoulder. A man stood just outside his truck, looking at me from around the open driver's side door. I knew him. Jonah Bodine. Gibson's father. A second later, he was there, kneeling beside me.
Oh my God, what happened to you? Did you get hit by a car?
I looked up at him with my one working eye. My sliced lip made it hard to speak, my voice coming out in a croak. Gibson.
What?
Need to get to Gibson. Help.
Did he? He didn't do this to you, did he?
I shook my head.
You're Callie Kendall,
he breathed.
The judge's daughter.
I nodded.
Sweetheart, you're bleeding. My God, your arm.
My face had to look a mess, but blood was flowing freely from my arm. Jonah yanked his shirt off and quickly tied it on, gently pressing the fabric to soak up the blood.
Do you want to go home or the hospital?
I shook my head, crying out at the pain it caused. No.
Who did this to you?
I looked down. I couldn't tell. They were too dangerous. They'd kill me.
All right, you don't have to say. Not now.
Please. I reached down and grabbed his arm, pleading for all I was worth. No hospital. No police. Please, take me to Gibson. I need his help. He stared at me for a long moment, a deep groove between his eyes. I could smell the faint hint of beer on his breath, but he didn't seem drunk. His eyes were crystal clear.
Are you and Gibson?
He trailed off, but I knew what he meant. No, friends. Finally, as if coming to a decision, he shook his head.
No. If you go to Gibbs, there's no telling what he'll do. Look, I'll help you, okay? But don't get him mixed up in this. You're trying to get away, is that it?
I nodded. Can't go back.
No,
he said again.
No, you can't. All right, we'll figure something out. Come on, let's get off the road.
He cast a wary glance around, then stood and gently helped me to my feet. I couldn't stop shaking. He got me into his truck and dug through the glove box for some napkins. I pressed the coarse paper to my face, careful not to touch my nose. He went around to the driver's side and got in, muttering about ice and bandages and something that sounded like Gibbs would kill him. He started his truck and pulled out onto the street.
Chapter 36, Maya.
My dad didn't hurt me, Gibson. He never touched me. He just cleaned up the messes afterward. I still held his arms and tears ran down my face.
Jesus, Callie,
he whispered. It was her. I couldn't remember. After I ran away, people always assumed it was my father. I got to Blue Moon with a nose that was smashed to pieces and deep cut on my face. I had bruises on my back and my arm was sliced to ribbons. People thought it must have been him and I never corrected them. I had to get it all out of my head. It was torturing me. Her face, her voice, her dead eyes. I stopped, a sob choking off my words. Gibson gently drew me into his arms.
held me against his chest and stroked my hair. I was having a breakdown in poor Henrietta's cabin, but I couldn't stop. The dam had finally broken. She was always cold, but it started when I was 8. My voice was muffled in his chest. I overheard things I shouldn't have, illegal things my dad was doing. She said she had to for my own good. She had to make me obedient so I'd never tell anyone about him.
Oh, my God.
It got worse when I was older. She started slicing my arms, drawing blood. She made it look like I was hurting myself. She told her friends I was troubled, made me see a psychologist. She'd hurt me before each session to remind me not to tell them anything. She'd whisper in my ear that I was a terrible girl, and if she had to, she'd cut too deep and let me bleed.
Fuck, Callie.
Gibson's voice was strangled. And he never stopped her. He knew what she was doing to me, and he didn't stop her. Just went behind her with bleach and kept the cabinet stocked with bandages so he could hide what she did. He justified it, telling me it was necessary.
Gibson held me in his strong arms, stroking my hair. Neither of us said anything. I felt sick and exhausted, like I had poison in my veins. The taint of it clung to me, the terrible memories so hard to face. But just when I thought I might crumble beneath the weight of the horror threatening to crush me, I breathed in Gibson's scent, felt his hand slowly rubbing my back, his cheek resting against my head. I sank into him, the raw power of his love like a cleansing shower. It washed away the worst of the poison. It reminded me I wasn't that girl anymore, that it had never been my fault. His strength fed mine, the power I'd always had inside of me, the courage that had allowed me to live a life after being so brutally abused. I wasn't a victim anymore, and I wasn't going to allow my mother to continue harming me all these years later. Closing my eyes, I wrapped my arms around Gibson's waist and faced the truth, owned it, and decided not to let it break me. I pulled away, feeling shaky, but whole. Thank you.
For what?
He had tears in his eyes.
For loving me.
He leaned his forehead against mine.
I'll always love you. Honey, are you serious about this? Are you okay?
Yes. I couldn't remember. I'd locked it all away. But I'm sure of this, Gibson. I can see it now. It was my mother who hurt me.
The license plate still bothered me. Not that it was from Virginia. Plenty of Virginia drivers must go through this area. One of them losing a license plate, probably in an accident, wasn't unusual. But why would it have that frame? The one my mother had used to project the image of the proud parent with an accomplished child.
Henrietta, do you remember where you found the things in your collection?
She nodded an enthusiastic yes.
All of them?
She nodded again. It was clear her collection was important to her.
Can you please tell me where you found this?
I pointed to the license plate, afraid to touch it again. She held up a finger, gesturing for us to wait. From a cabinet, she produced a rolled-up piece of paper. Gibson helped her spread it out on the floor. It was an old map of Bootleg Springs and the surrounding mountains. We crowded around it, and she touched her finger to the spot marked Bootleg Springs.
Did you find it in town?
Gibson asked. She shook her head, then traced her finger along one of the roads leading out of town. Tilting her head, she studied the map for a few seconds as if making sure. Then she stopped her trace and tapped her finger a few times.
There?
Gibson shifted so he could look more closely.
That's Mountain Road. That's where my...
Henrietta nodded, grabbing the license plate, then took down a basket. She placed the license plate on the map and covered it with rocks, sticks, and pine cones from the basket.
It was buried when you found it, he said.
Another nod. Gibson stared at the license plate like it might burst into flames.
That might be why no one else did. Henrietta, when did you find this? Recently?
She shook her head and scrunched up her face, her eyes narrowing as if she was thinking hard. Finally, she held up both hands, splaying her fingers, then closed them and held up two.
12. Do you mean 12 years?
One sharp nod. I met his eyes, but neither of us spoke. We didn't have to. His mother had died in an accident on Mountain Road 12 years ago. An accident that might not have been an accident. This wasn't a coincidence. This was proof. My parents, probably my mother, had killed Connie Bodine.
Chapter 37. Gibson. Callie's revelation left me reeling. We packed up the license plate and brought it back to my place. She changed out of her jeans and curled up on the couch with Cash.
You should take it to the sheriff,
she said, running her hand over Cash's soft fur. How are you so calm? I asked. She'd just dredged up those god-awful memories, but I was the one pacing around the room.
I feel clear, she said. It was like cleaning poison from a wound. It hurt, but now that it's over, I think I can finally finish healing.
I knelt in front of her and touched her face. You're amazing. Do you know that? Her smile soothed some of the rage boiling inside me.
Thanks. So are you.
I grumbled something incoherent as I stood. All right, I'll go see the sheriff. You sure you're okay? Do you want me to call Shelby or Leah May or Scarlett or something?
I have Cash to keep me company. I'll be fine. I think I need a little time.
Cash's ears twitched and he opened his eye. Good boy. Take care of our girl. I was glad Callie was handling things so well. I was proud of her for being strong enough to face her past. Me, on the other hand, I was fucking done with the whole thing. I was sick of waiting, sick of being told we didn't have enough evidence to put these monsters away. There wasn't long until the judge's confirmation hearing. I wasn't going to sit around and hope there was enough paint on the license plate to get a match, or that someone else would find a way to prove Lee Williams worked for the judge. The fucker was wandering around my town, making my girl afraid to go out. It was getting on toward dinner, but I found Sheriff Tucker still at the station. Bex brought me back to his office. Gibson, he said, looking up from a stack of paperwork on his desk. What can I do for you? He raised an eyebrow when I lowered myself into the chair on the other side of his desk. I pulled the license plate out of my bag. He moved his papers aside so I could set it in front of him. What's this? I think that when you run that plate, you'll find it belonged to Mrs. Kendall 12 years ago. His eyes widened slightly, and he smoothed his mustache a few times while he studied the plate. All right, Gibson, I'm listening. I told him everything, and the more I talked, the more shaken up he looked. His jaw hitched, and I could see the fury in his eyes, anger that matched mine. It burned like a bed of coals in my gut. When I finished, he was quiet for a few minutes. He nodded his head silently a few times, like he was digesting everything. Damn, he said finally. The sheriff had always been a man of few words, and he didn't need to say anything more. I understood, felt the same way. Yep. He shifted the license plate and clicked his mouse a few times, typed something on his keyboard.
You're right, Gibbs. This plate was from a blue Audi A6 registered to an Imogen Kendall.
Did you say blue?
He met my eyes.
I did.
Cass found blue scratches on Mom's car.
She did.
I felt like I was about to pop out of the chair like a jack-in-the-box, but Sheriff Tucker put up a hand.
Easy, Gibbs. We'll have to see if forensics can match the paint. How's Callie handling it? She okay?
Yeah, she's all right. Said she feels better now than she can remember, like cleaning poison from a wound.
I shook my leg, unable to keep still.
So what do we do now? More tests? More waiting?
He tipped his fingers together.
Well, I've got an entire town full of amateur surveillance detectives keeping tabs on Lee Williams' every move. Seems he's settled into a routine. Breakfast at Moonshine, a drive around town, circling past the vacation rentals and the Kendall's house. Sometimes trips to the pop-in or shopping by. He's wandered into Build-A-Shine a few times, browsed the other stores, sits in Yeehaw Yarn and Coffee or down at the lake with a cup of joe, then a drink or two at the lookout each night.
What in the hell is he doing?
Watching, chatting up the locals. My guess is he's listening for any mention of Callie Kendall.
One corner of his mouth lifted in a subtle smile. But Bootleg ain't talking about Callie Kendall, are they?
No, they're not. Tongues are wagging about the big new tires Trent McCulty put on his pickup and whether they're making up for a deficiency elsewhere. Whether old Jefferson Waverly's going to build a new barn on his land. Who got into Bex's garden shed and ran off with her favorite set of pruning shears? Or who's going to play matchmaker for Mona Lisa McNugget and get a town rooster?
It still won't keep the truth from that jackass forever.
No, it won't.
He smoothed his mustache again.
Would be real interesting if some motivated individuals could get Lee Williams to sing like a canary, wouldn't it?
I stopped shaking my leg. Sure would.
Interesting that he stops for a drink at the lookout every night, too.
My eyes narrowed.
Sure is. Thanks for bringing this in.
He moved the license plate aside and shifted the stack of paperwork. I stood and went to the door, my mind already racing, making a plan.
Gibbs.
Yeah?
I glanced at him over my shoulder. He didn't say anything, just held my eyes for a few seconds. I nodded. It wouldn't do any of us a bit of good if I pounded the guy's face into the dirt. We needed Lee Williams locked in a cell, not me. But it was time to handle this bootleg style.
Chapter 38. Gibson. Next day, I went to work making preparations. Then I called my brothers and George and told them to meet me at the lookout before the evening rush.
I can already tell I'm not gonna like this.
Bowie kicked out a chair at the table I'd chosen in the back corner of the bar. Jameson, Jonah, George, and Devlin were already here, barely drinking the beers they'd ordered. I had a basket of fries I had no plans on eating. They were just to give Nicolette some business while I took up one of her tables. Callie had shared her newly remembered details with Shelby. I appreciated how well Shelby had talked her through it, gently asking questions and helping her work out what she knew. Cassidy had sat in on it, eventually taking down an official statement. It had been hard to watch Callie go through that, recalling all those horrible things, but I'd been so damn proud of her. Shelby and Cassidy had done the job of filling in the rest of my family, so the dark looks on my brothers' faces were no surprise. This ain't a get-away-from-it-all trip to the bar, is it? Jameson asked.
Nope. Tonight, we're on a mission. We're gonna get the truth out of that Lee Williams asshole. I probably could have handled this thing myself, with Nicolette's help, of course, but I wanted my brothers here as backup.
Oh boy, Devlin muttered and took a swig of beer.
How do you plan on doing that?
Bowie asked.
You gonna chat him up at the bar?
In a manner of speaking, yeah, we're gonna bring out the big guns. Jameson and Bowie shared a look.
You don't mean...
The corner of Bowie's mouth ticked like he was trying not to smile. I crossed my arms and nodded. Moonshine truth serum. Jameson didn't hide his grin.
Oh, shit. You got Sonny to give you some?
Of course he did. I told him what it's for.
What's moonshine truth serum?
Jonah asked.
I'm glad you don't know either, because I was just about to ask the same thing, George said.
Bowie let out a short chuckle.